Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we'll have the latest updates for you on what's open this holiday weekend and a warning from county health officials on looming shutdowns of many businesses as early as next week due to the rising number of COVID-19 cases and outbreaks in our region. We'll have a reminder about the dangers of do-it-yourself fireworks, which are illegal in our county, including a new hazard posed by using hand sanitizers around sparklers. And that's due to the alcohol in sanitizers that can cause explosions. Although many fireworks displays have been canceled across our county, we'll tell you about several live local fireworks displays that you can view off-site with social distancing or online. The pandemic has impacted the City of Santee's budget, causing a major loss in sales tax, and we'll have details. Despite a need that's higher than ever for services to help the homeless and those at risk of becoming homeless amid the pandemic, El Cajon's City Council has voted to end its lease with Crisis House, a shelter that also provides the only walk-in services for the homeless in East County. Kaiser Permanente is standing up against racism, including giving funds to Black-owned businesses and working to end systemic racism. Hear more on today's show. The FDA has issued a warning about hand sanitizers made in Mexico that are still for sale in the U.S. and that contain a toxic and potentially deadly ingredient. Plus, the federal government has eased standards for organ donors to make more organs available to patients in need. And on the second half of our show today, we'll have our perennial 4th of July holiday special, our Spirits of 1776, interviews with our founding fathers and mothers. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. It's been a roller coaster week for some local businesses. Early in the week, San Diego County health officials ordered bars, wineries, and breweries shut down amid rising COVID-19 cases and reduced hospital ICU capacity. One day later, the county eased up those restrictions, allowing those businesses with outdoor seating, such as rural wineries, to reopen and indoor establishments to serve alcohol with food. The county also imposed a 10 p.m. curfew on bars and restaurants serving alcohol, and those are the rules going into this holiday weekend. But on Thursday, Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, announced that San Diego County has been placed on the state's watch list. The state has already ordered many businesses in 19 other counties to shut down, and some San Diego businesses should prepare for shutdown orders here that could come as early as July 7th, Dr. Wooten warns. Those businesses that may be forced to close include eating and drinking establishments, although curbside takeout services can continue for restaurants, while wineries and breweries can sell bottles curbside. Family entertainment centers are also expected to be shut down, including movie theaters, zoos, and museums. This shutdown would last for at least 3 weeks. The actions could occur as a result of San Diego County's COVID-19 cases surpassing the state threshold of no more than 100 cases per 100,000 residents. If that rate is not reduced to below the threshold by Monday, the shutdowns are expected to be mandatory. As of July 1st, 7% of tests in our county came back positive for COVID-19, with an average of 4.9% positive over the last 2 weeks. That's up from about 3% the 2 weeks before that. A record 584 new cases were reported countywide. The county also reported 10 new community outbreaks on July 2nd. 8 of those outbreaks are tied to restaurants and bars, one in a grocery store and another at a business. Several other recent outbreaks resulted from household gatherings held illegally. This 4th of July weekend, county health officials urged the public to avoid gatherings with non-household members. Residents are also asked to wear masks, keep 6 feet away from those not in your household, stay home if you're ill, and wash your hands frequently. Also be aware that owning or using fireworks is illegal for individuals in all parts of San Diego County. Besides the usual dangers of burns posed by sparklers and other fireworks, Public safety officials are warning that use of hand sanitizers, which contain alcohol, which is flammable, poses an extreme danger of explosion around fireworks. Coming up next, we'll tell you where to find some fireworks displays locally and legally that you can watch from a safe distance or even view online in the comfort of your own home. Have a safe and happy 4th of July from those of us at East County Magazine on KNSJ. This is Miriam Raftery reporting.
This is Jonathan Goetz with an update on where you can watch fireworks on the 4th of July this year. Due to COVID-19, many of our region's most popular 4th of July celebrations have been canceled. But some have revamped to provide virtual celebrations or fireworks that can be enjoyed with social distancing. San Diego's Big Bay Boom is canceled, but a 4th of July TV special on Fox 5 begins with a pre-show Salute to Heroes at 8:30 p.m., followed by fireworks at 9. It will feature highlights from past Big Bay Boom events. Julian's 4th of July parade and jubilee for the town's 150th anniversary has been scratched due to the county not issuing any parade permits amid the pandemic. Other canceled Independence Day celebrations this year include the Alpine 4th of July Parade and Festival, the Lake Murray Fireworks and Music Fest, Ramona Fireworks, Rancho Bernardo Spirit of the 4th, the Midway's Fireworks Show, and the annual cookout at the San Diego Zoo Safari Park. Here's where you can still see live fireworks displays this July 4th. All shows start at 9 p.m. El Cajon will have its annual Look to the Sky fireworks display at Kennedy Park, which will be visible across much of El Cajon. Due to social distancing requirements, the park itself will be closed and no public gatherings will be permitted at or near the park. Santee will host a virtual celebration online, followed by live fireworks and two simultaneous shows at Town Center Community Park East and West Hills Park. Fireworks locations will be closed to the public, but you can watch from a distance or on the internet. The 80s All-Stars will perform a virtual concert to rock your 4th of July, and there will be a flag ceremony before the fireworks, which will be synced to music on KSON 103.7 FM radio. Poway will host two fireworks shows, one launched from Poway High School, the other from the city's Sportsplex in the South Poway Business Park. The fireworks will be visible from across much of the city, with the second display made possible by donations from local businesses. Poway Mayor Steve Voss says the celebrations, quote, will bring people together in spirit and shine a little bit of light into the darkness we've been experiencing due to the pandemic, all while we celebrate our nation's founding.
For East County Magazine, I'm John Sepulvedo. The city of Santee will sustain an estimated loss of $1 million in sales tax revenues in the coming fiscal year that started on July 1st. This is a result of so many stores being closed or only partially open due to the global COVID-19 pandemic. That sales tax hit is contributing to an annualized rolling deficit ranging from $500,000 to $600,000, and it's having serious consequences at Santee City Hall on Magnolia Avenue. Finance Director Tom McDermott told the City Council this week that the city has already taken the following actions: furloughing or laying off most of the part-time employees, instituting a hiring freeze, suspending a vacation buyback program for management, cutting all non-essential purchases as of May 1st for the rest of the fiscal year, and deferring some capital expenditures. All this was a dramatic shift from the scenario the city was looking back in February when McDermott forecast the 2020 fiscal year would end with a $900,000 surplus. Thanks to that forecast, which happened again before the COVID-19 pandemic, the council was dreaming up of beefing up its Highway 52 improvement fund and making improvements to key gateway entry points. The projections on the impacts from the COVID pandemic are pretty challenging, McDermott said. Even after realizing some $870,000 in savings from all the cuts and reduced spending and moving another $585,000 from other accounts, Santee's fiscal year 2021 general fund budget of $46.2 million is still coming up short. So McDermott had to dip into the reserves for $486,000 in order to balance it. This reserve allocation still keeps the city's balance above the minimum 20% of general fund expenditures, but McDermott noted that the ongoing escalating expenses will keep that deficit growing in future years, threatening the city's fiscal health. The two main reasons for the ongoing deficit are the continued increase to the city's public safety budget and its pension payments. About $30 million, or nearly two-thirds of the city's $46 million budget next year, goes to the Sheriff's Department and the City Fire Department. The Sheriff's contract amount increases again by 5% in 2021 to $16 million, while the Fire Department's budget actually declines slightly to $14 million. The pension problem is systemic and ongoing, with no relief in sight. For the 2021 fiscal year, Santee will shelve out $4.9 million in pension payments, up $539 from the current fiscal year. The budget is getting some relief from the unprecedented $2.2 trillion federal assistance package Congress passed in April in response to the upheaval caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Santee was allocated $4 million by San Diego County, which obtained a total of $25 million to distribute to 17 different cities around the county. The city of San Diego obtained $249 million in a direct disbursement. The Santee City Council spent most of its time on this item talking about the problems associated with businesses reopening and the metrics affecting those decisions. For East County Magazine, I'm John Sepulveda.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
In a highly controversial decision, El Cajon's City Council voted unanimously on June 23rd to approve an early lease termination agreement ousting Crisis House from city-owned property. Crisis House provides shelter and services to the homeless and others in need, as well as for survivors of domestic violence. For the past 26 years, the city has leased property on Magnolia Avenue across from Parkway Plaza to Crisis House for $1 a year, recognizing the value to the community of the services provided by Crisis House. The nonprofit has a mission to break the cycle of poverty, domestic violence, and homelessness, and strengthen families and individuals so that they can thrive and transform their lives. The city wants Crisis House gone from its current location near the brand new Hampton Inn Hotel, so the city is offering Crisis House $700,000 if it vacates by September 30th. That amount diminishes to just $350,000 by year's end and $150,000 by March 31st, or zero if Crisis House stays until the lease expires on June 30th next year. Mary Case, executive director of Crisis House, says that's not enough time to find an affordable space and that the city's action will almost certainly mean major cuts in services. She told East County Magazine that so far, the organization has been unable to find a new location for what the city is offering due to a lack of available and affordable space. Given that the nonprofit's budget for rent has been zero, facing the prospect of paying high rent amid a pandemic is daunting. Case says a real estate advisor has told her that more properties will likely come on the market in the future due to the pandemic forcing some businesses to close or downsize, but that is not expected to occur by the September deadline. And she notes, now is not a great time to fundraise for our cause when people are losing money in the stock market and worried about going to the grocery store. Moreover, holding fundraising events is prohibited currently due to COVID-19. Crisis House already operates on a lean budget with no development staff and personnel focused on providing services to its clients. Crisis House has been serving East County for 50 years. The nonprofit lost space on Main Street 26 years ago due to redevelopment, but back then, Case recalls, the city found a new space for Crisis House and paid for its relocation. Redevelopment is again a factor, but this time the city is not providing relocation, only a modest financial incentive at a timetable that may be impossible to meet. Asked why the city wants to oust Crisis House, Councilman Gary Kendrick said, "We're trying to revitalize that area. That's the wrong place for a homeless center. It's right by our new hotel that's opening, and there's a lot of homeless going over there." He says there are problems caused by homeless camps near Crisis House and behind Home Depot. City staff has recommended selling the property where Crisis House is located, which was bought with Community Development Block Grant, or CDBG, funds back in 1994. After any early lease termination money paid to Crisis House, the rest of any revenues would be used for other CDBG-eligible capital projects, such as improving Wells Park, lighting and sidewalks, or adding curb ramps for pedestrian access. Kendrick insists that Crisis House should be able to find suitable space and that the city does care or it wouldn't have offered the $700,000 incentive. It doesn't have to be in El Cajon, he says. adding that El Cajon already offers more social services than other cities in East County. The County of San Diego has also failed to provide any homeless shelter in unincorporated areas. Kendrick wants other East County cities and the county to do their fair share to provide for people in need. Now, the City of El Cajon has given approval to expand the East County Transitional Living Center, increasing its capacity by 120 more. That facility now has a waiting list to house families in need. It offers only a faith-based Christian program for those who need a place to stay for longer than 30 days, as well as access to job training and certain other services, unlike Crisis House, which provides some walk-in services available to all homeless people that the East County Transitional Living Center does not. What's most at risk of being lost? Case says drop-in homeless services would most likely be cut, including meals given out, showers, bathroom facilities, a mobile clinic, and a place to recharge cell phones. She states, the county has no walk-in services for the homeless, and pretty soon, that's going to be the way it will be in El Cajon. The rapid move will likely force her to narrow the focus to mainly help women and children who are victims of domestic violence. That's because some areas would require a conditional use permit for homeless services, which can take months, plus paying rent long-term means less money available to fund services for people in need. 9 letters from the public were read during the council's virtual meeting, all opposed to the plan. Case says even more letters were sent, but some were not read. Anna Marie Piconi-Snyder, consulting project director for the East County Homeless Task Force, argued for Crisis House to be given more time. She told the council, several advocates for the homeless praised the Crisis House programs and urged council to allow Crisis House to remain or give the nonprofit more time to find a new location. One person who sent in an anonymous comment had this to say, "The Crisis House is really the only resource organization where you don't have to be religious in order to get help. Crisis House has been a big help to our homeless community for many years." Another wrote that as a former drug addict who graduated from the Crisis House Transitional Living Program, because of Crisis House, I had a place to live, to be able to get a job, and to give back to East County. Please, whatever your decision, think of those of us that have no voice and just need that help up. Crisis House saved my life. On the same meeting agenda where the decision was made regarding Crisis House, the city council was voting on hefty raises for the city manager and city attorney, as well as a $120 million increase to fund its police department. And ironically, many who spoke against that raise for the police asked for more funding to be expended on homeless services. Case voiced dismay, stating she was told the city couldn't afford to offer more help to Crisis House, yet somehow found money for all those other things. Crisis House has an impressive success rate. According to its website, over 85% of clients in the Crisis House transitional housing programs acquire permanent housing, income, and self-sufficiency. Crisis House continues to stabilize lives of over 18,000 families, providing case management and other social services to nearly 52,000 people every year. Case believes the city acted hastily, and she hopes officials may reconsider and extend the time frame at least until year's end for that $700,000 incentive, or better yet, help the long-standing nonprofit find suitable space in El Cajon, which has by far the highest number of homeless people anywhere in East County. Amid a pandemic that has left more people than ever vulnerable economically due to job losses, and many families facing added stresses from the quarantine, the nonprofit's clients and staff are now at risk. The director of the half-century-old nonprofit believes services to those in need who are served by Crisis House should be the city's top priority, and those services were never needed more than right now. But given the city's action, she now hopes to find help to find a property to continue services for the next 50 years. If the city won't reconsider its decision, she's hoping a philanthropist may come forward by donating a building. Individuals can also help by giving at crisishouse.org. Reporting from El Cajon on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Kaiser Permanente, the nation's largest integrated health system, announced a series of actions, including $60 million in joint investments and $40 million in grant funding, to address systemic racism and lack of economic opportunities that have persisted for far too long and prevented communities of color, and especially Black communities, from achieving total health. The announcement comes as Kaiser Permanente tries to send a clear message that the organization stands with those who are fighting for equity and social justice. Greg Adams, chairman and CEO of Kaiser Permanente, says The tragic murder of George Floyd and so many others has reverberated around the world, pushing us to demand overdue change to a status quo that keeps communities of color in the margins and holds us all back as a society. As a critical step towards supporting communities in overcoming systemic and structural disadvantages, Kaiser Permanente will provide support to more than 2,000 businesses owned by Black and other underrepresented people across the country. Communities of color are disproportionately impacted by a lack of economic opportunity, living under sustained financial strain that creates multiple barriers to good health. The health crisis and economic fallout from the COVID-19 pandemic are hitting low-income and communities of color, particularly Black communities, disproportionately hard, threatening to widen the health equity gap even further. To support businesses led by Black and other underrepresented individuals, Kaiser Permanente and the Local Initiative Support Corporation, or LISC, the nation's largest community development organization, have launched a $60 million investment partnership to strengthen businesses in the wake of COVID-19. The partnership will provide business loans of $100,000 to $4 million. Kaiser Permanente is also designating $15 million in grant dollars. Kaiser Permanente is also designating $15 million in grant dollars to increase access to formal training, business networks, and recovery and growth capital to help businesses led by Black and other underrepresented groups overcome systemic economic disadvantage. Maurice Jones, LISC president and CEO, says, "All across the country, we can see that health and wealth are inextricably linked. Creating pathways for people to get back to work in quality jobs and for small businesses to get on solid ground and grow is so important for the well-being of a nation at large." Kaiser Permanente also announced actions to help end systemic racism and break the cycles of trauma and chronic stress that contribute to poor health outcomes. Kaiser Permanente is designating an additional $25 million in grants to build upon its work to address adverse childhood events, or ACEs, and trauma, and to support grassroots efforts to end systemic racism. In the coming weeks, Kaiser says it will solicit proposals from community-based organizations, particularly those that are led or governed by Black people or other people of color, that are focused on dismantling discriminatory institutional practices and structures and/or promoting healing from chronic stress, trauma, and grief that stems from systemic racism and social injustice. Kaiser Permanente is also stepping up its commitment to workplace inclusiveness and supplier diversity. This internal work will build upon the organization's existing commitment to the $1 billion Roundtable and related efforts to spend almost $2 billion a year on women, LGBTQ, veteran, individuals of color, and individuals with disabilities, owned enterprises. Efforts to improve workplace inclusiveness will take the shape of a workforce equity analysis to identify improvement areas and redesign core talent programs to reflect inclusion, adopting science-based strategies to further remove bias and racial inequities from the employee and physician experience, and an accelerated approach to health equity through a new advisory board. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is John Fisteer with a health alert. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is warning consumers not to use any hand sanitizer made by Esk Biochem, a Mexican company. The products were sold under several brand names in the U.S., and are still on store shelves. These sanitizers contain methanol, or wood alcohol, which is toxic when absorbed through the skin or ingested. Methanol should never be used in hand sanitizers, the FDA warns. Substantial exposure to methanol can cause blindness, seizures, coma, permanent damage to the nervous system, or death. The hand sanitizers were sold under the brand names All Clean, Sanoderm, Esk Biochem, Clean Care, Lavar, and Good Gel. Some products tested had as much as 81% methanol. On June 17th, the FDA asked Biochem to voluntarily remove its hand sanitizer products from the market. but as of late June, the company has not complied, prompting the FDA to issue the consumer alert. If you purchase any of these hand sanitizers, stop using them immediately and dispose of the material as hazardous waste, the FDA advises. Don't pour them down the drain, since this could poison sea life in the ocean. Consumers who have been exposed to hand sanitizer containing methanol should seek immediate treatment, which is critical for potential reversal of the toxic effects of methanol poisoning.
This is Jonathan Goetz. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the U.S. Public Health Service published an updated solid organ transplant guideline to assess donors and monitor recipients for HIV, hepatitis B virus, and hepatitis C virus infections. This guideline reflects advances in transplant technology and safety that can increase the number of organs available for transplants. Currently, more than 110,000 patients in the United States are waiting for an organ transplant. Admiral Brett Giroir, MD, Assistant Secretary for HHS, says, "This guideline brings us one step closer to shortening the national transplant waiting list and saving more lives." He continued, "It reflects the impressive advances in testing and treatment over the last 7 years and provides actionable steps that will protect transplant patients from HIV and hepatitis B and C viruses. Previously, organs available for transplant may have been declined because of concerns about the potential for HIV, hepatitis B virus, or hepatitis C virus infection, particularly when donors had risk factors for infection, such as injecting drugs. Advances in highly accurate testing have made it easier for healthcare providers to quickly determine whether a potential organ donor has an infection. As a result, the risk for getting these infections because of a transplant is very low. In the extremely rare case that a patient develops one of these infections as the result of an organ transplant, by following this new guidance, healthcare providers will be able to detect an infection early and immediately begin treatment. A cure for hepatitis C is available, and safe and effective treatments for HIV and hepatitis B allow patients with these infections to remain well despite the infection. The guideline also recommends that organ transplant recipients receive hepatitis B vaccination. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, Director Robert Redfield, MD, says, "This is an important step forward for individuals in need of solid organ transplants." He continued, "Today's guideline are grounded in scientific evidence and advancements in testing technologies. These recommendations further expand the availability of life-changing organs for those in need." The Organ Procurement and Transplantation Network, or OPTN, overseen by contract by the Health Resources and Services Administration, or HRSA, develops policies for organ donation safety, donor selection and evaluation, organ procurement and transplant, organ allocation, recipient-informed consent, and follow-up monitoring for outcomes, safety, and infections. OPTN is responsible for developing policies consistent with guidance of the CDC to test potential organ donors and following transplant recipients to prevent the spread of infectious disease. OPTN will conduct a systematic review of its existing policies to ensure they align with the new recommendations.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
The weather will be warming up over the 4th of July weekend, but before you head to the beach, be aware that elevated surf is forecast to generate strong rip currents that will be hazardous to swimmers this weekend and next week. On Sunday and Monday, breezy winds, warmer conditions, and low relative humidity will create elevated fire weather conditions, according to meteorologist Casey Oswant with the National Weather Service. The conditions are favorable for fast-moving grass fires. The forecast includes west to southwest winds with gusts up to 50 miles an hour in the deserts and on mountain slopes near the desert. Early next week, fair weather with cooler than average temperatures will return, including night and morning low clouds and fog for areas west of the mountains, but fire weather will continue to pose a hazard in the desert and on our county's desert-facing mountain slopes. So take care if you're out and about this weekend. Pay attention to those signs at the beach, and we wish all of you a happy, safe, and healthy Independence Day weekend. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The California Highway Patrol is deploying extra officers between June 21st and September 30th to increase safety enforcement on State Route 67 from Interstate 8 in El Cajon to Ramona, an area known to locals as Slaughterhouse Alley. The CHP aims to reduce the number of motorcycle crashes caused by unsafe speed, following too closely, unsafe lane changes, improper turning, and additional violations by motorcyclists and other drivers. Many crashes in California end in death or injury as a result of individuals speeding or driving aggressively. In 2019, the CHP's area overseen by the El Cajon CHP office reported 230 injury crashes involving motorcyclists and 20 fatal motorcycle crashes. The enforcement effort is funded through a grant titled Get Educated and Ride Safe, provided by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery with KNSJ. In honor of Independence Day and the birth of independent media here today, we have lined up some very special interviews. Have you ever wondered what our founding fathers would have said about the news events that are happening now in America? Well, we decided to ask them. That's right. We've conjured up the spirits of 1776, our founding fathers, and some founding mothers, who fought for the liberties that we enjoy today. Of course, we couldn't really bring them back to life, but we have brought in actors to read in their own words the views of these revolutionary patriots, the radicals of their day. We asked them questions about the hot issues of our times, and the words they spoke over 200 years ago are as relevant today as they were back when America was born. Plus, in the spirit of bringing you all sides to this story, we have also brought in a leader from the Native American community during colonial times, as well as that ruler against whom the colonists rebelled, King George III. And now let's welcome our guests to KNSJ. Now, could each of you rabble-rousers please start by sharing a favorite quote with our listeners? Let's begin with former President Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Inspiring words. Next, we have Benjamin Franklin, famed statesman, scientist, and newspaper editor. Ambassador Franklin, what's your quote for today?
Rebellion against tyrants is obedience to God.
Thank you, Ambassador Franklin. Next up, Patrick Henry, my ancestor and the former Virginia governor who called the British Stamp Act treason and helped foment the American Revolution.
Give me liberty or give me death!
Hey. King George, you had a little different view of this rebellion. Will you please share your reaction?
Once these rebels have felt a smart blow, they will submit.
Never! Never!
George, feel the smart blows themselves.
Your Highness, it didn't quite work out that way. We are also honored to have with us George Washington, the first president of our nation, known as the father of our country, a leader famed for his integrity.
I hold the maxim, no less applicable to public than to private affairs, that honesty is the best policy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Our next guest is Phyllis Wheatley, known as the poet of the Revolution. She once wrote a poem and sent it to General Washington himself. Mrs. Wheatley, can you please share an excerpt?
Proceed, great chief, with virtue on thy side. Thy every action let the goddess guide.
General Washington later invited you to actually meet with him. Can you please read another of your revolutionary verses?
Thick as leaves in autumn's golden rain, such and so many moves the warrior's train.
Now, Mrs. Wheatley also sent poems to British nobility and had her work published in a colonial newspaper. Her accomplishments are even more impressive when you learn that Mrs. Wheatley was a slave at the time, educated by her master,
more fortunate than the vast majority of slaves, of course. She later gained fame for her eloquent defense of liberty for all people. But more on that later. Our next guest is John Adams, diplomat and former president. What's your founding vision?
Government is instituted for the common good, for the protection, safety, prosperity, and happiness of the people, and not for profit, honor, or private interest.
Not for profit.
All right. Now we will hear from your wife, Abigail Adams. Mrs. Adams, you were a first lady and a champion for women's rights long before it was fashionable.
If we mean to have heroes, statesmen, and philosophers, we should have learned women.
Amen. Indeed, James Madison, another former president, we have quite a few of them here today, co-authored the Federalist Papers that helped to win ratification of the Constitution. President Madison?
Liberty may be endangered by the abuse of liberty, but also by the abuse of power.
Now, some listeners may not know that the American Revolution divided Native American people. Some tribes sided with the colonists and others with the British. Our next guest is Mohawk Indian Chief Thayenanegaye, also known by his English name, Chief Joseph Brant. He sided with the British during the Revolution and was actually considered one of Britain's finest officers, leading battles against those rebellious colonists. Chief Brant, please explain why you chose to oppose the colonists.
Indeed, it is very hard when we have let the king's subjects have so much of our lands for so little value. The Mohawks have on all occasions shown their zeal and loyalty to the great king, yet they have been very harshly treated by his people.
And finally, Thomas Paine, a corset maker by trade, later a journalist and a pamphleteer who authored Common Sense, or as the British called him, a propagandist. Mr. Paine, what quote would you like to share?
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands now deserves the love and thanks of a man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered.
Thank you, thank you. Now for our first question. How important do you believe it is to have media that is independent, free from control by the government or by powerful corporations? President Jefferson, let's start with you.
Where the press is free and every man able to read, all is safe. Where left to me to decide whether we should have a government without newspapers or newspapers without a government, I should not hesitate a moment to prefer the latter.
Ambassador Franklin, as a former newsman yourself, can you weigh in on the trend toward media censorship of controversial issues?
Whoever would overthrow the liberty of a nation must begin by subduing the freedom of speech. If all printers were determined not to print anything till they were sure it would offend nobody, there would be very little printed.
President Madison, why is a free press important to you?
To the press alone, checkered as it is with abuses, the world is indebted for all the triumphs which have been obtained by reason and humanity over error and oppression.
Next question. Recently, a whistleblower...
Whistleblower? Do you mean a fife player?
No, a whistleblower is someone who sounds an alarm.
Oh, like Paul Revere, our good friend who warned us that the British were coming.
Something like that. This whistleblower revealed that the government has been spying on Americans and accessing our telephone and internet records.
Phones? Internets? What manner of inventions are these?
Ambassador Franklin, I'll be happy to show you how to tweet and surf the net after our interview. I believe you'll be amazed.
Tweet?
But now the government argues that knowing who we communicate with is necessary to protect us from terrorists. Yet others say this violates our constitutional liberties. Ambassador Franklin, what's your view?
They who can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety.
Huzzah! Edward Snowden, the whistleblower who leaked the classified documents, proving that our government has been spying on Americans' phone and internet records, has been charged with treason. There is a very vigorous debate going on as to whether he is a hero or a traitor. King George, what's your definition of a traitor?
A traitor, of course, is anyone who does not agree with me.
Now you can see why they called him Mad King George.
Mr. Henry, in a very famous speech, you denounced the Stamp Act and declared that only colonists should have the right to levy taxes, not the king, and you went on to foment rebellion. Some in the crowd even shouted treason. What was your response?
If this be treason, make the most of it.
No new taxes.
It sounds like the original Tea Party movement. Chief Brandt, you traveled to Europe and were warmly received at the British court. But you raised some royal eyebrows when you were introduced to King George here. Tell us what you said.
I told the king, I bow to no man, for I am considered a prince among my own people. But I will gladly shake your hand.
Shake hands with no man. I shake hands with no man.
President Madison, in your day, the Barbary pirates were considered terrorists. Now drones, spies in the skies, are being deployed along our borders.
Spies in the skies? Do you mean balloons, such as the French launched in Paris?
Drones, actually, are unmanned flying machines, Mr. President.
Flying machines? Imagine that.
Do you believe changing times warrant more intrusion into our privacy to assure that foreign terrorists are not plotting against us?
If tyranny and oppression come to this land, it will be in the guise of fighting a foreign enemy. It is a universal truth that the loss of liberty at home is to be charged to the provisions against danger, real or pretended, from abroad.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Henry, what do you have to say about these recent erosions of our constitutional liberties?
Guard with jealous attention the public liberty. Suspect anyone who approaches that jewel.
President Washington, are you concerned about a chilling effect on free speech if journalists are monitored?
If the freedom of speech is taken away, then dumb and silent we may be led, like sheep to the slaughter.
Mrs. Adams, you once urged your husband, John, to remember the ladies when the Constitution was written.
That I did, though he did not listen.
Shame!
As to your extraordinary code of laws, I cannot bit laugh, my saucy bride. We know better than to repeal our masculine systems.
You may both find it of interest to know that a constitutional amendment finally granted women the right to vote.
Excellent! Excellent!
Though it didn't happen until 1920.
Mercy, what took those men so long?
Good question.
My heavens, this subjects us to the despotism of the petticoat.
But even now, in the year 2013, women are still earning only 77 cents for every dollar earned by men. Mrs. Adams, is your advice to your husband still valid today?
Certainly. All men would be tyrants if they could. If particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion, and we will not hold ourselves bound by any laws in which we have no voice or representation.
Strong words indeed. Mrs. Wheatley, you once sent a poem to Britain's Earl of Dartmouth, both celebrating American independence and making a case for abolition to bring freedom to African Americans. Can you please share some of that verse?
No more, America, in mournful strain of wrongs and grievance, unredressed complain. No longer shalt thou dread the iron chain which wanton tyranny with lawless hand had made, and with it meant enslave the land. Should you, my lord, while you peruse my song, wonder from whence my love of freedom sprung, whence flow these wishes for the common good, by feeling hearts alone best understood. I, young in life, my seeming cruel fate was snatched from Africa's fancied happy seat.
Thank you. Times have changed since then. The Emancipation Proclamation freed the slaves in the 1860s, and later, African Americans were granted equal rights. Today, we even have a black president.
Glory! Oh. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Your efforts were a key part of those changes. In a letter to a well-known minister here in the colonies, you likened slaveholders to the ancient Egyptians who enslaved the Israelites. As one of the early voices in the abolitionist movement, tell us what words you used to spark his conscience.
For in every human breast, God has implanted a principle, which we call love of freedom. It is impatient of oppression and pants for deliverance. And by the leave of our modern Egyptians, I will assert that the same principle lives in us.
Speaking of Israelites fleeing Egypt for a better life elsewhere, immigration is a hot topic again here today, as it has been for many, many years. President Madison, what is your view?
America was indebted to immigration for her settlement and prosperity. That part of America which had encouraged them most had advanced most rapidly in population, agriculture, and the arts.
Some broadcast media today foments bigotry and racism.
President Jefferson, do you find that troubling?
Broadcast media? It sounds narrow-minded. Bigotry is the disease of ignorance, of morbid mind. Here in America, we are destined to be a barrier against the returns of ignorance and barbarism.
Thank you. Chief Brandt, the revolution had an unfortunate consequence for Native Americans, who in seeking to protect their lands and cultural heritage were actually called barbarians. When the war was over, the British ceded lands in America not to the tribes who fought alongside them, but to the colonists. The war fueled resentment by colonists against those tribes that sided with the British and led to even worse oppression of some Indian tribes. But now in our time, the Idle No More movement has arisen, standing up for Native American rights. What are your thoughts on this?
Idle No More. If this effort demands respect for our sovereign rights, I rise in support. We are tired out in making complaints and getting no redress.
Most of our guests today have advocated for rebellion and fought in the Revolutionary War. In recent years, however, America has gone to war far beyond our own borders, even starting a preemptive war in the Middle East. What are your views on war and peace, President Jefferson?
Peace and friendship with all mankind is our wisest policy, and I wish we may be permitted to pursue it. I have seen enough of one war never to wish to see another. The spirit of this country is totally adverse to a large military force.
President Adams, what are your thoughts?
Great is the guilt of an unnecessary war.
Mr. Franklin, how about you?
There was never a good war or a bad peace. Wars are not paid for in wartime. The bill comes later.
The bill does come later. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of bills, I'm sure Tea Party listeners out there would want me to ask you about the national debt. President Jefferson, what are your thoughts on that?
The principle of spending money to be paid by posterity under the name of funding is but swindling futurity on a large scale.
Gun violence is on the rise in America today. As a revolutionary, what is your take on the Second Amendment, President Madison?
Americans have the right and advantage of being armed, unlike the citizens of other countries whose governments are afraid to trust the people with arms.
King George, what's your reaction to these armed upstarts in the colonies defeating that powerful British military force of yours?
Knavery seems to be so much the striking feature of its inhabitants that it may not, in the end, be an evil that they will become aliens to this kingdom.
So much for diplomacy. My next question is for Ambassador Franklin. A diplomat himself and a man of science known for his many inventions, including, reportedly, flying a kite in a storm to prove the workings of electricity.
Dear me, that was a shocking experience.
Ambassador, technology has seen many advances since your day, including radio and television, instant communications that use electricity.
So the power of lightning has been harnessed at last.
Yes, it has. But now some factions want to defund scientific research and discredit scientists on issues such as climate change, and not the kind you wrote about in Poor Richard's Almanac, I might add.
The rapid progress true science now makes occasions my regretting sometimes that I was born too soon. It is impossible to imagine the height to which may be carried in 1,000 years the power of man over matter. Agriculture may diminish its labor and double its produce. All diseases may, by sure means, be prevented or cured, not even excepting that of old age, and our lives lengthened at pleasure.
Oh, it would be nice to have our lives lengthened.
President Jefferson, how important is science in your view?
When I contemplate the immense advances in science and discoveries in the arts which have been made within the period of my life, I look forward with confidence to equal advances by the present generation and have no doubt they will consequently be as much wiser than we have been as we than our fathers were, and they than the burners of witches.
The Supreme Court, in a case called Citizens United, ruled that corporations have the same rights as people, and that restrictions on corporate contributions to candidates may not be limited. Mr. Payne, you warned about corporate power in your Rights of Man.
Corporations have a more extensive evil effect than what relates merely to elections. They are sources of endless contentions in places where they exist, and they lessen the common rights of national society.
Thomas Paine speaks the truth.
President Jefferson, the Occupy movement is a protest movement that's arisen over the power of big banks. How seriously do you take such concern?
I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies.
Now that's a revolutionary thought.
Yeah.
Chief Brandt, in our time, as in the time of the British Empire and colonial days, The rich and powerful sometimes seem to be above the law. You've had some strong words to say on this subject.
In the government you called civilized, the happiness of the people is constantly sacrificed to the splendor of the empire. Hence the origin of your codes of criminal and civil laws. Hence your dungeons and prisons.
Can you tell us how justice has traditionally been meted out in your Native American society?
We have no prisons.
Really?
We have no written laws. And yet judges are as highly revered among us as they are among you, and their decisions are as much regarded. We have among us no exalted villains above the control of our laws. Daring wickedness is here never allowed to triumph over helpless innocence. The estates of widows and orphans are never devoured by enterprising swindlers. We have no robbery under the pretext of law.
Can we imagine how different our world would be if this system were in place today? Now, on another topic, religious freedom and separation of church and state. You founding fathers have some differences of opinion, I understand. Let's start with President Madison.
The purpose of separation of church and state is to keep forever from these shores the ceaseless strife that has soaked the soil of Europe with blood for centuries.
Amen. Amen. Mr. Payne, will you please tell us your opinion?
All national institutions of churches, whether Jewish, Christian, or Turkish, appear to me no other than human inventions, set up to terrify and enslave mankind and monopolize power and profit.
Ambassador Franklin, what's your view?
In the affairs of this world, men are saved not by faith, but by the want of it. But to follow by faith alone is to follow blindly.
Recently, we've seen a trend towards secrecy by our government. How important is it to assure that media can serve as watchdogs to bring forth truth, Mr. Henry?
The liberties of a people never were nor will ever be secure when the transactions of their rulers may be concealed from them.
Yes. Huzzah. Yes. Huzzah.
On a lighter note, let's take some questions about pop culture. Another innovation recently is video games. I am sure our younger listeners will want to hear your views on gaming, Ambassador Franklin.
Games lubricate the body and the mind.
Oh. That sounds like Ben Franklin doesn't.
You charmer, you. One constitutional amendment that was passed and later repealed was a prohibition on alcohol. Winemaking has become a growing industry in our region, as it has long been in France, where you spent a great deal of your time, Ambassador. What are your views on imbibing those fruits of the vine?
Wine is constant proof that God loves us and loves to see us happy.
Amen.
I'll drink to that.
President Jefferson, you have been a champion of creating a strong public education system. But today, the price of college has risen sharply, though the current administration is striving to increase funds to help students. Can you tell us who you believe should be entitled to an education and why you think that is important?
The most promising genius, whose parents are too poor to give them further education, to be carried at the public expense through the college and university. The object is to bring into action that mass of talents which lies buried in poverty, and thus give activity to a mass of mind which, in proportion to our population, shall be double or treble of what is in most countries.
Hear, hear.
Thank you. Media bias is a growing concern in modern times, since the consolidation of media has put most major media outlets into the hands of a few big corporations. Mrs. Adams, do you believe it is important for people to hear multiple points of view?
I've always felt that a person's intelligence is directly reflected by the number of conflicting points of view he can entertain simultaneously on the same topic.
Thank you. What advice would you give to those who feel that it's just too much trouble to get involved in protecting our democracy, Mrs. Adams?
We have too many high-sounding words and too few actions that correspond with them.
Mr. Payne, do you agree?
The more difficult the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. An army of principles can penetrate where an army of soldiers cannot.
Mr. Henry, what's your advice to the citizens of today?
The battle is not to the strong alone. It is to the vigilant, the active, the brave.
President Adams, what's at stake here? Is there a risk in complacency?
Liberty cannot be preserved without general knowledge among the people. Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide.
Perhaps it takes truth and an informed populace for democracy to survive and thrive. President Washington, what are your closing thoughts as we celebrate the birth of independent media here today?
Truth will ultimately prevail where there is pain to bring it to light.
President Adams, what advice do you have for our listeners and for future generations?
Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives.
Yeah. Well said.
Yes.
Well said.
Yes.
Ambassador Franklin, are you concerned about election integrity?
Democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch. Liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote.
President Jefferson, we'll let you have the final word here on this Independence Day celebration with KNSJ.
I thank KNSJ for inviting us here to remind Americans today why we fought for the independence we won in 1776. I hold it that a little rebellion now and then is a good thing and as necessary in the political world as storms in the physical.
Thank you. If people do stand up for those rights enshrined by you founding fathers and mothers, how optimistic are you for our nation's future, President Jefferson?
I like the dreams of the future better than the history of the past.
Thanks to all of you for joining us on this very special 4th of July celebration, and I hope that everyone listening will have a festive and spirited Independence Day. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show here on KNSJ. I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to hear our show, where we report news that matters to people across our region. In an era of cuts to many major media outlets, shrinking local news coverage, and cries of fake news attacking journalists with courage to report the truth, it's important to recognize and support KNSJ Radio. KNSJ gives airtime for original reporting on issues that matter here in San Diego and East County, as well as national news that impacts people here at home. You can donate to help support real news, honest reporting, and inclusion of your community's views and voices at knsj.org. That website again is knsj.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, A.K. Jewell, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.